There's PCNN cases. Those are worried.
Which PCNN?
Hey, Commissioner, you're on.
All righty.
Oh.
All right. Good morning, everyone. Yeah. This is Commissioner Brian Colker meeting for a work session today. It is Friday, September 5th, a little after 9 a.m. The work session is on case number PU13-136, Highland Crude's crude oil pipeline, the siting decision. So I don't have any opening comments. I'll see if Commissioner Crispin does, and I'll turn it over to the portfolio holder.
I also have no opening comments.
All right. Commissioner Fedorchak, you're next.
Yeah. All right. Good morning, everybody. Do we need to go around the room and give? No? Do we not do that in work sessions? Okay. So we thought that we would.
We do make a reference that there are two Brians once again and two Julies today. Sorry.
So it'll be either a highly confusing or highly efficient meeting. I thought that we would just kind of run through things to bring us back into the loop on this this application. We had been waiting for the company to file more clear in higher resolution late filed exhibits. That's why this got delayed. And now we've received all those, and I think that we've got all the information we need, just need to walk through it and then draft up an order and make a decision on this. So, well, how we thought we'd run it is to have Brian, the other Brian, lead us through the late filed exhibits just to refresh our memories and talk through any fresh information that we've received since they were originally filed and some of the evaluation that Brian and Julie have done on these exhibits. And then we can ask questions and act accordingly. So I'll turn it over to you, Brian.
Okay.
And Julie.
Well, we'll just start with late filed Exhibit 1 because we had a couple of questions on it after the last work session, primarily with regard to the loop line and the construction dates.
And why don't you just remind everyone what each of the late filed exhibits are, Brian?
Late filed Exhibit 1 is it's entitled the Table of Start and End Dates for Segment Construction. And as discussed at the hearing and all of our discussion so far, the pipeline was constructed in essentially six different sections. Each of the construction start and end dates are depicted on late filed Exhibit 1. We were trying to figure out when the loop line was actually constructed because it doesn't appear to be reflected on this table that they supplied. I went back and listened to the hearing testimony, and from the hearing testimony, the vice president from Highland stated that construction on the loop, it kind of happened in two different phases. The first 3.5 miles of construction, he couldn't remember when exactly that part of it started, but the remainder of the pipeline or the loop line was constructed sometime in late 2013 and was finished and became operational in the first quarter of 2014. So,
and the loop line is on the Johnson's Corner
segment? Actually, it's not. The application states that it was, but at the hearing, he stated that that was a mistake. It's actually by the Camp Creek Injection Station.
Okay.
Which is on the yellow segment, I believe, of the map.
And which number is that segment, the yellow segment? GC.
So this would be.
And there's wider.
I believe it's 4.
Johnson's.
Yeah, because Johnson's Corner is at the end of that, so it would be segment 4.
So that's it was a 10-mile loop. 10-mile loop on that segment someplace.
Correct. It was by, he said it was by Camp Creek Station at the hearing, so.
Okay. Okay. So, and remind me again when you said the loop, based on the hearing and the testimony, what were the dates for the loop construction?
Well, the first 3.5 miles of it, he couldn't remember the date that they began construction on the first 3.5 miles, but the remainder of it was sometime in late 2013, and they finished it and it became operational during the first quarter of 2014.
Okay. So we have all those completed. That, anybody have any questions on late file exhibit 1? All right. Anything more to add on that from you guys or Julie? Nope.
I have nothing.
Okay.
Else.
All right. So the only question we had on that was when the loop, we've settled that, so we're done. We have what we need for late file exhibit 1. Okay.
All right, moving on to late filed exhibit 2. This was the depth map, and at the last work session, the map they gave us was, I don't know if there was just a problem with scanning it in or what the issue was, but we couldn't read the numbers clearly on there. They did supplement this map with a more high-resolution map, and if you look at the PDF version and zoom in, you can see all the numbers pretty clearly. The only area where it depicts a depth greater or less than 48 inches is in, what is it, section 156 north, 100 west. This was a rather hot button issue at the last work session, but when you look at the high resolution map, there's a little notation directly below where it states the pipeline depth on there of 44 inches, and it states that there was a third party that came in and covered it to 60 inches. So it seems like the pipeline depth in that area may have been resolved.
What was the location of that, Brian?
It's in section 156 north, 100 west.
Okay.
It sounds like a township and range, and like we need another a section yet.
Okay.
You can see it on the map, though, if you look at it.
Yeah, it's on the map. It's right by Epping. On the...
There's only one location in that section marked on the map.
Okay.
So it's pretty clear on the map which one it is. Oh, sure.
So, Brian, when it was not the 48 inches depth, and they added depth up to 60 inches, so was it uncovered or a not filled in trough, or do they got a big mound out there now? I'm trying to visualize how that would happen.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure. I know that Jillian and I had some email correspondence about it, and she said that it's 60 inches now. As far as how they got it to 60 inches, I don't know if they just put a mound of dirt over it or what they did to get the cover, but they said it's 60 inches from the surface now.
Well, I think, and I'm not, we got to find a little bit more than that, because if something seems odd. If it's a big mound now, then the first time the farmer comes through, he's going to level it back out. I don't know, Randy, you spend more time ranching on farming than I do, but that just seems to me to be if it's a mound, just what was the deal that let them do that? It just doesn't seem quite.
If it's pasture, maybe it doesn't matter, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the map says is excavation overlined by a third party, cover restored to greater than 60 inches.
Mm-hmm. As I understood it, there had been some excavation in that area, surface excavation, when they took the measurement of 44 inches, and then that just got covered in afterwards to level it out to make it the 60. That's the way I understood
filled it.
So filled it in more of a... Okay, that makes that's
the
fine.
The 44 was a result of the excavation. When they filled in the excavation, it was 60.
Okay.
That's how I understood it.
So they filled in an excavation, not just pile dirt on top. Okay. Fair enough. Well, just to make sure,
no, it's a good
right?
question. I was wondering this similarly, thinking, trying to visualize that. Okay, tell me again these data points that they provided on the depth. How do they retrieve those? Are those from pigging, or how are those data points? What's the basis for them?
Most of them are confirmed from the dig reports.
Oh, they dig in
reports.
Okay.
There were a few where I couldn't determine what the source of that information was.
Mm-hmm. Do we know, and this isn't necessarily directly related to this case, but just for generally, can they run a pig through a line and get the depth? Is that a method by which the companies can confirm the depth of a pipeline?
Not that I'm aware of.
I checked with the dam safety engineer at the Water Commission, and they have a similar type thing that they run through dams, and there are some that can be used that way. Mm-hmm. As far as pipeline pigs, I don't have any knowledge in the area, but these reports did not provide that.
Okay.
Those were the exposed pipe reports were separate from the pig reports.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't determine.
All right. That's something just from a technical standpoint we'll need to better understand moving forward, I think. Okay. So the goal here was to have the entire pipeline 48 feet or deeper, and based on the information the company has provided from how many different dig locations do we have the total amount?
There were 23 dig reports, and I think there were three that were not, a total of 20. So there's some depths that are recorded on that map. The ones that are in yellow,
mm-hmm.
we did not receive reports for those.
Okay.
And I'm thinking possibly also there's another color there.
Six, seven. So there's seven.
Okay, the red ones are the ones that we received.
Okay. So there's 20 or so. So we have 20 confirmed depths that show that it is 48 inches or deeper. So do we have any additional questions or concerns on the pipeline depth?
Not for me, no.
Okay. You guys have any concerns that you want to discuss about that, Julie or Brian or Mitch?
No.
You're comfortable with this? Okay. All right. So that concludes the second late-filed exhibit.
Okay, moving on to late filed exhibit number 3, which is the block valve map. And so another thing that we discussed at the last work session, the map that they gave us, we just wanted a higher resolution map, which they have provided. Looking at the higher resolution map, there doesn't really raise any concerns or anything that we didn't already discuss. So if there's any questions you have with regard to the block valve map, I guess this would be the time to bring them up. Mm-hmm.
They've marked all the block valves, and they have them appropriately located on all the river crossings and
it appears
all the boring sections of the land, the pipeline. Julie?
I think Pat had reviewed that map as well. I didn't receive any negative feedback from him that there was anything, concerns that he had.
Okay. You guys have any issues with the block valves? Okay. All right. Then we can move on from that one.
Okay, late filed exhibit 4 was just the emergency response plan.
Mm-hmm.
We went through that, I guess, in about as much detail as necessary at the last work session. I didn't really hear any major concerns about it. So if anybody has any concerns to bring up, I guess.
No, just as long as it was all documented and loaded and we're good.
Okay.
Good.
All right.
Moving on to late filed exhibit 5. This was the, I believe this was the landowner map of the people who haven't signed waivers yet. One of the issues that came up at the last work session with regard to the waiver and easement discussion that we had was whether all the easements had been obtained prior to putting this pipeline in, and they had been all obtained. That was something that was discussed at the hearing, and it's on the record, and we're pretty solid on that issue. As far as the waivers, we haven't received an update from Highland as to whether any of these waivers have been obtained. I guess the last that we heard was that they have not. and nothing's been supplemented from there, and we haven't heard anything otherwise. So
okay.
It appears we're in the same situation as we were at the last work session with regard to that issue.
So there's 5 outstanding waivers from the residences within 500 feet.
Correct.
Okay.
What do they want us to do on that? I mean, it's their delay here. And it was very clear the last work session what the commission was looking for. I mean, what is their response to what they're going to do here?
I think Highland's response, and that would be that there's no reasonable alternative, and we should find that it's okay to construct there.
So have they put that in their request?
Yeah, that's part of the application.
The very first one, right? We had the hearings. So that's really more a decision point for us than it is. So they're not going to give us any more information.
There's nothing to us to indicate that we're going to get those waivers anytime soon.
Got it. The a background question for our attorneys. The it's my understanding that for gathering lines particularly, a company can't put in gathering lines unless they have an easement, period. And even for pipelines, they can't put in a pipeline unless you have an easement, period. So these are questions we're asking, but it's not like a power line where they can go to condemnation, and these pipelines are going to always have the easements in place.
Easements or eminent domain. They can.
Can they get eminent domain in a gathering line? I've never seen that.
I don't think so. Well, honest answer is I'm not sure. In this case, their testimony was they had all the easements, so they've got permission to be where they're at. What they don't have is waivers for those 5 residences within 500 feet.
What would be the best argument if the commission chooses to say, okay, we accept there's no reasonable alternative? How strong is the legal argument on that?
Well, that's... It's okay. I mean, I can give you what I think the argument is, look, we built this as a gathering line. It's now in place. If we take it out of the ground and move it so it's not within 500 feet, we've got additional environmental disturbance. We can't get the waivers. So there's going to be additional disturbance and more environmental impact if we move it, therefore no reasonable alternative. You know, the other side of that argument is, you know, you were building this line. It looks like you knew it was going to become a transmission line at some point. You know, our requirement for a 500-foot waiver, and why didn't you move it 500 feet out or get the waivers? And, you know, that's the other side of it.
So if we were starting new, if this was not in the ground, and they wanted to build it as a transmission line, so then they would need not only the easement from the landowner, but they would need the waiver in advance from the neighbor, right?
They wouldn't necessarily need the easement to cite it. They would need the waiver from the residents within 500 feet, or they would need an explanation why there was no other reasonable alternative to being within 500 feet.
So on the transmission line, if they couldn't get, let me focus first on the landowners. If they couldn't get the easement, but they had everybody else's, they would then go to eminent domain, presumably, and
correct,
potentially get that. But they would not use eminent domain on the waivers. That's something that
correct,
we grant instead of going through court?
Yeah. They don't need an eminent domain for those waivers because those waivers don't necessarily, and in this case 4 of them, don't deal with property that the pipeline is actually running through. For the residences in this case, the pipeline is not on their property. It's just within 500 feet of their residence.
So if we're starting fresh, we would make the determination as far as the waivers. The courts would make the determination as far as the easements
yes,
couldn't get. And then in the case of our deciding on the waivers, then they could appeal it, our decision, to a court.
Yes.
The homeowners could.
The homeowners could, or Highland could, depending on which way.
I'm sure we go.
This issue, in my opinion, comes down to a couple things. First of all, they companies, I know, are moving quickly out west, and we want them to be building pipelines and getting them in the ground. So I understand the urgency of these projects. That doesn't, though, necessarily mean that they should be cutting corners, and if they're thinking that a line is going to be a transmission line or has the possibility of being a transmission line longer term, they ought to be looking at what those requirements are in advance and trying to meet them in advance. In this case, they knew this particular landowner, the Vances, didn't want this line that closely, and they tried to work with them and get them to move it further away ahead of time. So the company knew this was an issue, and they did not convince me in any of their testimony or late filed exhibits that they tried to find an alternative and were refused. That is not on our record. So maybe the farmer preferred to have it on this edge of his property, but did he refuse? We didn't hear that he refused or would not allow it. In fact, we heard from the Vance's attorney that they felt that they probably would have allowed it if that had been pushed. So I think in this case, I'm not inclined to give the company the waiver over the top of this family who came to the hearing and is opposed to having this within 500 feet of their property. They're the only ones we heard from. The other landowners, I don't know what their issue is, if they're adamantly opposed or not, but I know the Vances are, and I'm not inclined to provide that waiver for the company. I think that these pipeline companies need to take the extra time and do these projects right and get the support of the folks who are going to be living with this infrastructure for the rest of their lives and future generations. So that's where I'm coming down on this issue. And so I'd like to draft the order accordingly, that they, you know, we grant them the order for the project and require them to obtain the waiver or make necessary changes to it, to the line.
So the make sure I understand. So there's five residences we're talking about, correct? And so you're thinking just the one here or all five?
Well, I guess I'd probably defer to our legal counsel on that issue. If it seems if we're requiring the waivers, we'd require all the waivers.
It seems to me that the evidence on those was somewhat similar for all five of them, other than, well, I group them into two groups. There's the one and then there's the four, because one of them obviously granted an easement but didn't sign the waiver for the 500 feet. And then there's the four who are in the Vance's position, don't own the property on the pipeline but have a residence within 500 feet. But I think, as far as I understand it, the evidence on within 500 feet, the efforts to get the waivers and not being able to get them, and the consideration of reasonable alternatives is all kind of lumped together in the same evidence for all the properties involved.
But the previous commissions have gone no reasonable alternatives in different cases because there was no reasonable alternative. I mean, you start getting into a refinery or getting in other areas, there's just only one way to thread the needle.
Right.
But in this one, that was the part that I still, the reasonableness of the other alternatives. I mean, Julie, your point of that one, moving it to the north in the fields, it does seem reasonable. But there was other concern. So I don't know that it's as easy for me as to say all five are in the same block without your guys' review of what you think the legal arguments can be, because there is other things that come into play.
Let me make a suggestion, if it would be helpful to the commission. We did get the proposed findings from Highland earlier this week. For the next work session, I could propose that we draft a section finding there's no reasonable alternative and a section finding they haven't shown us that there's no reasonable alternative. And, you know, we could put as much information we can glean from the record for each of the properties, a full analysis of both sides of it for the commission's review and discussion at the next work session.
Yeah, because I'm looking at the maps, and I don't recall any discussion about the other locations having a more difficult time finding an alternative. They all look like pretty much open fields.
Yeah, and at the hearing, they did say that the 500-foot issue was never even a consideration because they were building it as a gathering line, so this is something that they never even explored as far as moving the pipeline outside of the 500-foot restricted area.
Fair enough.
Okay.
In my notes, I'm showing that three of them, and I haven't
gone back far enough in my notes to see who was talking at the time. But the three were told by their attorneys that they don't need to sign the waiver. And I guess as I'm trying to remember it, I'm thinking that that meant they don't need to sign it as far as allowing them to be there. It didn't mean that they don't, they're not forced by law or something to sign it. So I don't know that the implication here is that they don't really object. They just don't feel they need to sign more paperwork. And so am I recalling that incorrectly?
No, that matches my notes exactly as far as the three landowners. Well, Highland said that three of the landowners didn't sign because their attorney said they didn't have to sign. So,
but they don't really necessarily object either. Isn't that the what we heard?
I think it's fair to say what the record says is we don't know why those people didn't sign the waivers, or we don't know if they object. They didn't show up at the hearing and object, obviously.
So they could be easy to get. Those waivers could be easy for them to get. We just don't know.
I think we just don't know.
Right. We know that they didn't show up at the hearing, and we know that the company said that they didn't sign them because their attorney said they didn't have to sign them. Those are the two things that we know. So,
to say that there's no reasonable alternative, don't we need some kind of evidence that they at least tried something?
I think they're,
you know, something that shows, you know, an amount they offered. Like, let's go to the case of the Vances there, you know, that they offered that neighbor some amount of money to get that further out in the field, and so there was that price plus the cost of relocating it, and even that was turned down. So,
yeah, I would
tried something.
I would urge against going towards the price of whatever they offer for the waiver. You know, the reasonable alternative rule itself says economic considerations alone aren't enough. I think everybody would agree it's more expensive probably to move the pipeline than to get the waiver. But I think a starting question when you look at the statutes and everything together is, well, first, you know, if you have a waiver, then we don't have to get in a reasonable alternative. So the starting question and part of the relevant analysis is, why don't we have the waiver? So I do think that is a relevant inquiry.
See, for me, this is just my viewpoint, Randy. To say no reasonable alternative, I don't really look much at the economics of it. I look at the terrain of physically moving the pipeline. If moving it to the north, there's wetlands, there's big ravines, there's just no other place to put it because of safety concerns. So to Mitch's point, the economics, I think, is a slippery slope to start having them file paperwork with us and how much they've offered and all that, because that's, to me, it's just if there is somewhere else they could put it at, they should do just what Mitch said. They should make their own analysis and come back and figure it out. But yeah. So, because for me, I guess what I'm getting to is for me to say that I'd like to look more, I'd like the company to have more of a, you know, why couldn't, you know, if they come back and say spot four couldn't be moved to the north or south because the roads here, you can't put it in the middle of the road, like I said, the ravines, the valleys, that's pretty easy to me to get to no reasonable alternative because there is no other reasonable alternative.
And I think in this case, what complicates the analysis is obviously the fact that the pipe's already in the ground. Usually when we're dealing with this issue, it's the pipe's not in the ground, you can't get a waiver, you search for other alternatives. Here, the pipe is in the ground, which is obviously the complicating factor in evaluating this for this particular.
But again, back to my point, these companies need to be planning ahead, and they can't go through, put a pipe in the ground, and then have that be the justification for no reasonable alternative. They need to know what the criteria are for transmission lines, and this is something that we know pipeline companies are doing. Even if they had 100% intention of operating it as a gathering line, they know that volumes are changing, and so they ought to be looking at the long term on how this pipeline might be operated and try to establish it in a way that would allow for the conversion. And putting it, I'm very hesitant to put, you know, have a precedent whereby having a pipeline in the ground is the justification for there's no reasonable alternative because we already built it.
At least my understanding from talking to Brian, listening to this stuff and going through the records is that this 500-foot waiver issue is kind of the elephant in the room on this pipeline. I'm not aware of other major issues, if you will. And at least my thought when in making the suggestion of laying it all out there in, you know, kind of two different orders was to evaluate the reasonable alternative, but then, you know, if there aren't any other issues, it'd be basically approve on the with a condition that they get the waivers.
Right.
Or approve because there's no reasonable alternative. Mm-hmm. If there's no other issues with the entirety of the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
Refresh my memory again on where these five landowners are at on the route. But there's no way to approve the other sections, and then, I mean, this if we end up breaking it apart in two different orders. Thanks, Julie. Okay.
Market Center Pipeline, so it's this one down here someplace.
Julie Prescott, what's you're saying this is the... Show me what you're talking about. This one, two, three, four, five?
Yeah, the Exhibit 5, the map on there, if you look down at the legend, they have all the names of the parties who own a residence within 500 feet of the pipeline listed there.
That.
And then they're color-coded to match the segment.
Okay. Well, I'd even throw another alternate. So, but really, where those locations are, there's really no way to prove just part of this. You know what I mean? Like we've done before, so okay. Okay. Well, that sounds reasonable to me, to what you just said, Mitch and Brian.
Do we want to schedule another work session today so we can get this one completed? I don't want to drag this out much further.
I'm fine with that.
And
scheduling, yeah.
But before we do that, maybe we should complete the rest of the, let's just finish up the rest of the late filed exhibits then.
Moving on to late filed exhibit 6. This was the simulation in the event of a spill at the Vance's property. The biggest issue that we had with the original map that they supplied was that it was kind of small and difficult to see. They have supplied us with a larger map. It obviously just depicts the same stuff, except it's easier to look at. So, and that map's right back behind the keyboard over there. And then they also supplemented late filed Exhibit 6 with their analysis as to why they didn't perform a blast radius study on this. And essentially the gist of the memo that they submitted is that it's a crude oil pipeline and it wouldn't explode like a gas pipeline would. And they also went into a little bit of the analysis as to how a pipeline leak can't be analyzed the same way as the explosion out in Castleton could, because that was due to an outside third-party strike, and there was some other circumstances that surrounded that which wouldn't be applicable to this pipeline.
Julie, do you have any analysis you'd want to share on that exhibit?
This exhibit was just received yesterday, and under the circumstances, I would have liked to visit with Pat,
mm-hmm.
the pipeline safety perspective, and it wasn't possible. So,
I think, you know, I think what we could do is have Julie talk with Pat about it, but at least my recollection from, you know, all the siting cases we've done is really a blast radius isn't necessarily applicable to a pipeline. It's a spill radius in spill scenarios. I think the discussion probably got it was just in the kind of the heat of the moment using, you know, the blast radius terminology because we're familiar with that with gas pipelines, but... other than that, I think from our end, assuming Julie doesn't find anything different from Pat of a concern of, you know, explosion or something of that nature, I think at least from the legal end, we're okay with what they have filed on that.
Okay. And what about the exhibit, the larger map with the spill? Anything more to add or discuss there, Julie?
I guess with what I was saying too, Julie, just so you know, I mean, I was just saying I think we've got everything we asked for that we can get on it. I wasn't necessarily talking substantively about what the map said. So.
Maybe you should bring the mic up to your mouth.
I don't have anything to add from last time since the submittal was identical and there wasn't any more information provided. There was no...
So your conclusions model. On the spill radius, if you could summarize what your conclusions are in analyzing that.
Okay. Well, the map depicts the two pipeline the pipeline location and if it was moved location to the north. And it indicates, as Kathleen Spillman testified, that pipelines, if there was a leak, it would follow the pipeline itself before coming to the surface. And so they tend to do that just because of, again, the path of least resistance. And the map was supposed to show the spread. If it came to the surface, a one-inch spread in depth, where would it go? And that was the analysis they provided. Just, you know, following topography, I assume, is what they used.
Mm-hmm. And so it shows basically that it comes to the board of the house but doesn't cover that property.
Right.
The home site.
Analysis indicated that it would not impact the actual house. So.
Or any of the buildings.
I could bring that closer if you want to look.
Sure.
Maybe in the two draft orders you're working on, you're probably thinking already ahead of me, but depending how those turn out, this, if you don't accept the waiver, then this will not be a point. But if you do take the waiver, then we've got to have a finding in there that says that modeling showed that you guys are tracking it out ahead of it. That is a nice picture, too.
Well, and that, it's part of the record now and is probably useful to the Vances as they determine whether they want to sign a waiver or not.
Yeah. Okay. I think we're good. Any more on that issue? You're good. Okay. So then we just have the pig testing and hydrostatic testing reports. And I think you've looked at and analyzed all those, Julie.
I looked at those. I provided those to Pat as well.
Can you summarize your conclusions on those for us?
The pig reports, and there's a summary table, which is probably pretty useful here.
Mm-hmm.
Talked about the different runs and the anomalies found, and from that they base their decision on recommended digs. And then the exposed pipe report gives the information from those digs, what was determined.
Mm-hmm.
So and the depth of cover that was recorded.
Right. So in the pig reports, what was there anything alarming that you saw in those pig reports or anything of concern?
They detected some deformations or dents or, you know, small problems, but it didn't appear that there was anything of major concern. There's nothing recorded in this summary table that indicates there was a major problem.
Yeah. Okay. Randy, Brian, you have any thoughts on the pig reports? All right, then we are down to the noise impact studies and map depicting locations of potential impact. And again, no major concerns here. Nope.
None that I saw.
Yeah.
One thing that may be worthy of noting, since this is kind of where the numbering gets a little bit messed up, there is no late filed Exhibit 8. They just labeled this as late filed Exhibit 9. So if you're looking through it later, there just is no late filed Exhibit number 8 on the, at least that's been filed. So.
I'm just, what's the highest noise level that was recorded on the through these studies? Noise was measured.
Mm-hmm. Looks like the highest one that I can see is 92.9,
mm-hmm.
which is 3 feet away from the pump, it looks like.
Yeah. But in terms of near an occupied residence, they have stated that they'll be 50 decibels or less.
Yeah, and the maps appear to be consistent with that.
See, now, if you look at the Bethel Injection Station noise study map, all those that's all industrial sites located near that, correct? Those are not residences.
Yeah, it appears that way.
Epping. All right. Gregor. So is McGregor, is that the closest residence on the McGregor Station noise study map? Is that the nearest residence?
Yeah, that would be the closest thing that could be a residence. So it'd be in that over or less than 50.9 decibel range.
And it looks to me like that might be the closest one of any. All right, well, at any rate, they're below the EPA recommended level, so on all the locations. So that's been the standard in the past, and I guess I'm comfortable with that standard. If you guys have any additional issues on the noise?
No.
Okay. All right. So that that's concludes all the late file exhibits. Is that correct?
Nope.
One more?
One more. Late filed exhibit number 10. Which is just a list of all the permit applications.
Oh, right. And has that been updated or not?
It was received on
August 20th,
so we didn't have it at the last work session.
Okay.
So this is the only version of this that we've received.
And I saw mine this morning, but now I'm having a hard time finding it, so... do you want to walk through that, Brian? Okay.
There's a variety of applications and permits that are listed on here. So, and it seems like a lot of them have been retained back in 2011, 2012. There's numerous ones on here, but it seems like everything's fairly consistent with what we would see on any other pipeline.
Have they gotten their core permits for crossing the river? I suppose they have because it's already in the ground. Oh, what kind of a permit did they need to cross the yellow? Didn't they cross? Doesn't this line cross the Missouri? Sure it does. A couple of places.
They bored under.
Oh, they bored, yeah. So then, yeah. Okay. All right.
And if it's approved, any order we have would,
be contingent.
Require
yeah.
them to have all necessary permits,
mm-hmm.
everything they need anyway.
All right. Well, so we'll set another work session date. Any other questions, Randy?
Yeah, two more. Was there something else that we asked for that is going to be late filed 8 and
What happened is we stipulated 9 late filed exhibits afterwards, and they labeled them 1 through 10 and skipped 8. So there are 9 of them, and they do match up with what we stipulated. We're not waiting for any more late files, no.
Okay, and then, you know, getting back to number 5. Was there, did I understand you right, Mitch, that, is there somebody who is a landowner that gave an easement but for some reason still needs to, is one of these 5 that would need to sign a waiver? Cause
that's my understanding.
Yeah.
Isn't the easement, when you're the landowner and the homeowner, isn't the easement kind of the same as the waiver?
It would depend on the language of the easement, but typically not. Usually the easement forms are standard, and the waiver forms are also standard, and they usually don't cross language. The waiver form is just, I understand it's going to be within 500 feet. I don't object. I waive the construction within 500 feet. The easement form gives them permission to construct on their property.
But that was the argument that was made in the one letter here I'm looking at that says that Highland believes that the fact that there is an easement believes the waiver is given.
Yeah,
in their
and that could be
you're differing with that.
They didn't submit the easement, so I don't know the language. But I think the fact that the easement was given by that landowner is certainly a fact that would be in favor of Highland's argument that it's okay to be within 500 feet of that argument. I don't think it acts as a waiver itself.
I guess
that makes a difference. If that made sense at all, if you understand what I'm saying.
Well, it does, and you know. In that case or those cases, is there just one of those or is there...
There's just one of those and then there's 4 of the other kind.
I'm not so... Depending on what the cost... I don't know what reasonable is without getting into cost. I mean, if it's a small matter to move that just a little bit to get outside of 500 feet, maybe it's reasonable to move it. But if it's going to be a big cost and the person granted the easement, I'm not so sure that it is reasonable to move it now on that case.
Yeah, and that's why I mentioned why I mm-hmm. group them into 4 or group them into 2 with the 4 and the 1. The cost itself, I think it's fair to say that the cost to dig up this pipeline, move it, do whatever is necessary to make sure there's no contamination from oil spilling out while you move it, anything like that. I think it's pretty fair to say that the cost to physically move any portion of this pipeline is going to be high. I think we can assume that or know that, if that helps at all, if that's what you're getting at. I mean, we've got...
Isn't there a counterpoint here, Mitch, too, though, if we're trying to look at both sides of the different agencies that weigh in? Because I reviewed the letter back from the North Dakota Game and Fish says that, you know, they don't really have much impact here because it's not going to further destroy any, you know, native prairie and woody vegetation. So the Game and Fish would come back, and maybe even the Fish and Wildlife Service would then weigh in if they tried to move it somewhere else. They'll say, wait a minute, we don't want any additional disturbed soil in this region. So they would probably, their analysis would be different, I'm guessing. Well, I shouldn't say it may be different if you ask them to move it.
Yeah, it may be, and that's all these questions come up solely because the pipeline's already in the ground,
right.
Of course.
Because the Fish and Wildlife Service did not weigh in this case because it was in the ground, but if they were asked to move it, then the Fish and Wildlife Service would want to weigh in, I'm guessing.
Well, you were going to draft 2 orders, one deeming these that there's no other reasonable alternative but to leave it where it's at, and another that the approval from us would be pending them getting waivers, right? Is it how about if we have a third alternative separating that one, that there's no other reasonable alternative on that one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's what
the other 4 would...
And that's what I intend the draft to be. It really kind of set out everything we know from our record on each of these properties so that you all have every bit of information you can, hopefully, about what's in our record on each of those properties and the different angles we can take with that evidence.
Thank you.
I like that approach too, Randy. Okay. Anything else?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
Do you want to schedule?
Yeah, let's schedule.
How much time do you need, Mitch and Brian?
A couple weeks, probably.
2 o'clock today?
Today's Friday the 5th. Let's see here.
And I would say that this is just from my viewpoint. If all of a sudden the company files something that says they have waivers on all five of these, we could fast-track an order and we could vote on it, from my viewpoint. So that's...
I agree. The waivers are the key. We'd have to, and we have a meeting on the 17th of September.
We've got a bunch of work sessions on the 19th already. That's 2 weeks from today.
Has the company expressed any urgency? Like they're waiting for this, they're bugging us to get done?
Not so much. I mean, we haven't had that expressed to us.
You know. Okay. Because I don't know if it's possible to get a work that orders and a work session before that 17th meeting?
I wouldn't push. I mean, we've got a lot of information to pull together. I mean,
okay.
Just to make sure we have everything accurate. I mean, we know where it all is, but there's five properties involved. And
We do have, would the 19th be reasonable?
That works for me, other than from about 11:45 to 1:30.
I'm actually booked after 11, so the morning is good for me.
Could we do 9 or 10?
Our work sessions are at 11 and 1 that we already have scheduled, right?
Yep.
You want to do 10 o'clock?
Yeah, anytime, just as long as we're missing those two. And
okay, let's say 10 o'clock.
If that works for you all.
If that works for you guys. Yeah?
Yeah, I'm open.
Daryl, you got that?
It's September 19th at 10 a.m.?
Yep.
All right, got it.
This case number.
And so at that session, we'll have the draft orders to review, and we can move from there.
We will do our best to get them to you as soon as possible before the meeting. Is there
okay?
Do either one or three want them a week before, or do you want them at least 2 days before? I mean, my goal would be at the latest to get the draft orders circulated by the Wednesday morning before that meeting to give you 2 days to go through the information. Is that... As a final drop date, is that okay with the commission?
Well, with Monday being booked up, we're going to be in Watford City anyway. For me personally, Tuesday's going to be pretty busy. All the last minute stuff that comes in for Wednesday's meeting. So unless it was done already next week, I probably won't be working on this until after Wednesday's meeting.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Usually
look at that stuff the day before. I mean, I know we know what it's going to say. It's just you guys are going to flesh out the exact terminology, so I don't.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anything else? All right, we'll go ahead and close the work session on case number PU 13-136. Thank you all.